happening?
Tis ghostly talk for sure.
Again, for another week of insanity here. I'm Scott L.
And I'm Doug.
And you are listening to the only, as far as we know, paranormal show on the internet.
Yeah. Well, there's going to be a skeptics show, evidently. I was surfing the net, and some guy is doing a skeptic radio show.
Yeah,
but it's not coming up for like a year or something. It's like...
That gentleman has a lot planned, though. He's putting a lot of work into it.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, we planned Ghostly Talk for like a minute and a half.
Yeah.
And then bought the equipment and did it. Yeah.
That's how we plan our shows pretty much now. It's about a minute and a half.
So what do you want to talk about? Oh, let's talk about something. Okay.
No, that's
there you go.
That's how it works.
How's that for a bump? Yeah.
Yeah.
Things that go bump in the night.
Yes.
That's actually a good thing I hit the table because it brings us pretty much to what we're going to be talking about.
Poltergeist. We've mentioned them, of course. We've talked about them a little bit, of course.
I mean, how can you not?
Yeah.
They're the most phenomenal of hauntings.
Yeah.
Although they are different than hauntings.
Yeah, we decided to do a whole show around it, though. We thought it'd be very cool to kind of dive into this and see what the research says or what the theories are all about, because it's all theoretical, like everything else that we're doing. It's all theoretical.
And like everything else, we only have an hour to talk about it,
so
we're not going to get to everything. I warn you now.
Yeah, hopefully we'll get through as much as we can.
We'll try and get a nice varied show together here, but...
What we're going to do is basically the first half hour, we're going to talk about, what they are, what's been researched on them, ideas people have about them, and then in the last half hour, we're going to talk about two of the most prominent cases we've been reading, and we thought they were the most interesting. Mind you, everything we're talking about today, it's all theoretical, it's all ideas, it's not exactly what we believe, it's what makes the most sense to us, basically.
Yeah. So it'll be fun.
Start off simple, though. Most of you probably know, if you have a clue about ghost hunting or the paranormal, a poltergeist is a nasty or noisy spirit. Okay?
Right. Noisy ghost is what people usually interpret it as, but poltergeist is actually what...
It's a German word, which the first half, poltern, actually in German means to knock, and geist means spirit, so hence German poltergeist.
Yeah, knocking spirit,
noisy
ghost.
Noisy, knocky ghost. Okay, the earliest known reports of poltergeist, they date back to ancient Romans. Other poltergeist records can be found in the medieval times of China and Germany. The reports indicate unexplainable events such as throwing dirt, flying objects, awful smells, loud noises, unexplainable lights, and ghostly apparitions, all of which are very similar to the still ongoing reports of modern poltergeist right now in this day and age, or whenever, like this century, okay? Why exactly poltergeist activity occurs has been under debate by experts and scientists for decades. Well, yeah. poltergeist usually begin with... they usually begin and end abruptly. That's what we've seen, we've read.
The most of the reports that we've seen, they come about pretty much all of a sudden, although they do go in stages.
Yeah.
There's stages to poltergeist
activity.
But they start, these stages begin suddenly, and then they end just as suddenly. Although, from probably typical, one of the stories that we're going to tell later is like...
That one
it ended because they left.
Yeah.
They're like, okay, that's it. This house is haunted or whatever.
Well,
leaving.
That's where we can get into that aspect of what a poltergeist is, which makes it different from a haunting, though, is, theoretically speaking... A poltergeist, the most explainable part of it is that it's not really a ghost at all. Or it could be a ghost. Let's just feed off both those then.
Okay.
Now we're completely confused now.
It's either a ghost or not.
Yeah.
I like that theory. That's a good one.
I should have my own seminar.
I'm going to write that down, yeah.
No, but...
Poltergeist 101.
The first theory is that the actual energy is... in part due to adolescence, emotions. They say that most cases, typically from what we've read, is usually females under 25 years of age.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of it. Now, you can narrow it down even further. That they say the majority of it, when you really get in depth, is teenage females.
Right.
Now, I know we've talked about this before on the show briefly. obviously, we've all been teenagers out there. The majority of us who are listening are probably, you know, in our 20s or whatnot. And
me too. Oh, wait. I'm not. I'm but, in my 30s.
You know, at that age, there's a lot of angst. A lot of, you know, a lot of, there's a lot of emotions going through you.
I remember angst. And I also remember at the time when you're a teenager, your body is just an absolute, you know, going through some incredible changes.
Sure.
So, yeah, so you're talking biochemical changes going on.
Yeah, so.
Electrochemical changes going on constantly in your body during that age frame.
Mm-hmm. What they directly correlate the two is basically psychokinesis. That's what could be the responsible agent for poltergeists, which, like we said before, a poltergeist, you know, it's been recorded since the ancient Romans, obviously, that things get thrown around, things get knocked around. And I'm talking about things from pop cans to a couch.
Yeah.
That stuff that the guy has actually been recorded where furniture was flying around.
There's, like, heavy stuff. And there's, you know, noises and footsteps and apparitions and scary stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's got to be pretty scary stuff if you don't know what's causing it.
Yeah, now, so that could be, that's one way to look at it from the research, that it's directly correlated with a child or a young adult, and it's psychokinesis from that person. Now, they say that they have, these people have no control, they are controlling it, they have no idea they're controlling it, though.
Right.
And most of the time, they don't even know they're responsible for it. They don't even know they're responsible for it. So, a lot of times, it's just an innocent kid who's going through a rough time. Like we said, teenage years are rough. They're tough.
Well, another thing is, because when we were reading all this stuff, one of the things is when you go in, like, you know, your house is haunted or whatever, and then you seek help.
Uh-huh.
And if they determine, okay, this is a poltergeist kind of activity, mm-hmm. They'll start looking for the agent. And the mm-hmm. agent is going to be the person who is usually in their, you know, teens or early 20s, going through a rough patch and that kind of thing. Sometimes they'll get them some help, psychological help, mm-hmm. and that kind of thing, and the poltergeist activity will cease.
Yeah, it'll go away.
Yeah. So the energy, you know, could be pulling from that agent, that person that the activity centers around.
That's usually what it's correlated with, is a person. And they say, but there's the other angle that you can look at, too, which people have said, is that it may be a ghost.
An actual ghost.
That feeds off that child's energy.
Yeah.
And that's what that's all we talk about here is energies.
Right.
And that makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, it could be a ghost.
It could
feeds
be
off
yeah,
that child energy.
A discarnate entity that is, you know, taking advantage of the fact that there's a young adult with this, you know, biomechanical furnace or electrochemical furnace going on inside themselves and just taking advantage of it and causing all these interesting things to happen.
Yeah. Now, a question that me and Doug both asked each other when we were getting ready for this show was, okay, well, there's poltergeists, and then there's, like, ghosts or hauntings. Okay, well,
poltergeists, ghosts, hauntings.
What's the difference here? What really differentiates the two? Well, we did some research, and we're going to report that to you. There's a couple things that make them different. And, of course, there's tons of gray areas, too.
Oh, there's, yeah. So they do overlap, just like everything else in this industry or this business or this hobby.
Yeah, so
field of research.
A few high points we found that, okay, let's say a haunting, all right? Within a haunting, that involves a ghost of deceased human beings appearing frequently in certain places and times, which would be referred to basically as a residual haunting. That's where it's like a film projector.
Yeah, repeats over and over and over and doesn't need it doesn't, you know, evolve around a person.
Yeah.
It just happens over and over. The ghosts that you see or the apparitions or the happenings don't even, you know, they don't
do anything.
Interact.
Yeah,
with
that's what
this
I was going to say. These are just tape reels,
ethereal
tape reels, just keep running over and over again, doing the same thing. That's why you hear all these stories. Well, at 12 o'clock, the stroke of midnight on this day, you'll see a woman without a head walking over a bridge or some type of story like that, because it's something that just happens.
Yeah.
Over and over again.
Over and over.
And that's where you get all these different stories from. Now, in comparison, a poltergeist may not be ghost at all, like we said. There are theories. The theories are that poltergeists are mass forms of psychokinetic energy that a living person is unknowingly controlling. But a person, like we said, the person is controlling this, they have no idea they're doing it. In some cases, extreme poltergeist activity has been linked to demons. I don't want to get into that. That's just part of the write-up. I don't want to get into
demons.
That.
Demons.
Ooh.
With hauntings also, the appearances of spirits in areas known to be deceased before death. Okay. Like we said before, haunting, usually it's a place. Okay.
Yeah.
This is an easy way to think about it. A haunting usually refers to a place. The haunted chapel of Mazangaga or whatever. We've heard all those stories.
We didn't hear that one.
I'm just making
write that up as a short story.
Okay, and basically a poltergeist refers to, from the research or the theory so far, refers to a person. They're responsible for that, and it follows them too. What it says in the write-up here, poltergeist can be triggered by a living person's trauma in any location at any time, like we said. So this particular thing will follow you.
Yeah, it would follow you.
Yeah, it will follow you no matter where you go. So you can't get away from a poltergeist, basically. If you're the agent.
Right, if you're the agent. Mm-hmm. If you're not, you can. Like if the
yeah, if you're living with someone who is
the agent. You leave, you're cool now.
Theoretically speaking.
However, I wonder though, because we didn't see any of this in the research. I wonder if it's like, perhaps the agent himself or herself would, when they physically leave that place,
yeah,
their angst or whatever is temporarily relieved, and they wouldn't feel the
leaving a psychic impression.
Yeah, and so maybe they wouldn't be, you know, have this poltergeist activity follow them necessarily if their angst and energies and stuff are brought about because of the place that they're in.
So what you're saying, maybe the person who is not the agent. We have two people living in an apartment together. The one person is the agent of this particular poltergeist incident. The other person says, "I'm scared to death. I'm getting out of here." Well, they leave. They could.
They're pretty cool. Yeah, but no.
May be able to leave a psychic impression on them, though, too.
Well, I'm thinking the agent. Yeah, that's true. But I'm thinking the agent, him or herself. Like, let's say you're living in an apartment that you absolutely despise, mm-hmm. or that your neighbors you don't like, or you're in a place that you just can't stand,
uh-huh.
and you're the agent,
mm-hmm.
and then you go on vacation.
Mm-hmm.
And you're in sunny Florida or whatever, and there's, you know, you have not a care in the world. So maybe the poltergeist activity wouldn't follow you there.
Possibly not. Then it would be classified under a haunting then.
Yeah, then it would be a haunting because it didn't follow
you. But that's a good way to look at it, though. What if where you live, I mean, we all know, I just came back from vacation, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I'm at home. I'm at work every day. I'm dealing with all these things. Lots of stress. That's a part of it. I go on vacation to Tennessee to see my grandma this week. I lay on the couch and watch CNN all day long, like I told you I did.
Yeah.
Not a care in the world. Well, except for the news. But there comes the ice cream truck.
Yeah, we're going to have a torrential downpour here.
He's late, today. Man.
Yeah,
he's
late.
Here earlier.
He must have had a lot of business earlier.
But you know, anyways, I see exactly what you're saying. The stress may go away temporarily.
Mm-hmm.
But they say, let me just make sure I cite this, because I did see something in our articles we read on this, that there's certain types of personality traits or disorders that attribute to a poltergeist. It isn't just like, well, I'm under stress. That's part of it. That may be a small part of it. But things like schizophrenia.
Yeah.
Anxiety problems. Anxiety disorders. Obsessive compulsiveness. These are the things that they say a poltergeist will latch onto. So we'll take a break real quick, and we'll come back right on this, okay? So I want to keep going on this real good. One moment, please.
It's paranormally scientific. It's ghostly.
Okay, so that's another difference. There's a couple more here. Like we said before, activities are continuous over time, concentrated in the same general area.
Mm-hmm.
Activities build up over time. We're going to talk about the stages.
Are these the stages?
No, these are the differences. Activities build up over time to a climax and then start over. Poltergeist energies can travel anywhere with anyone, like we said before, okay? So that's what we're saying. A haunting is, from the research, has to do with a place. A poltergeist has to do with a person.
Yeah.
And finally, it
seems to be the common thread.
Mm-hmm, and finally, and this is probably one of the more important ones, hauntings are not violent by nature. You won't read too many stories about a haunting, like one place. There's a couple out there, like you were telling me the story about that gentleman from Texas who got ran over on the bridge.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, okay, step back here for one sec.
Okay.
I'm going to Houston, Texas this week, 2 days from now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was, of course, digging up on the internet all the interesting stories about Texas. And there's evidently this one guy who herded his goats or something across the bridge.
Uh-huh.
And every day to take them out to the field or whatever they had to do, and then back. And he would do this every single day, and then one day he got hit by a car on the bridge and flew over, you know, off the bridge. And when they fished him out, he had lost his head, and a goat had lost its head. And when they fished out the river, it looked like, you know, he had been his head had been replaced by a goat head.
Yeah.
So anyway, now, when you drive along, you know, and you're going to cross this bridge, they say that you'll see you could see this guy with a goat's head coming at the car and creates actual physical damage to your car.
So
they say, you know, don't do that because, yeah, you know, your car will get damaged. And I'm like, well, I'd like to see that happen. I'll pay for the repair. Yeah.
So that's what insurance covers something like that, though?
Yeah.
Act of God? They have an Act of God clause, though.
Well, Act of Ghost.
I don't know. They're going to think you're nuts and probably kick you off the plan.
Well, this goat-headed man attacked my car. I don't know if they write that up exactly in that way.
So that's what we refer to here at the Ghostly Talk Studio as a gray area.
Yeah.
Because something like that, I mean, it's a recurring, it happens in one place, same thing, but it has nothing to do with a person.
It has nothing to do with a person,
but
yet it does cause
it's
damage.
Violent, too, and they say, like, that is the point here, is that a haunting generally, it isn't a violent thing. It's just something you see over and over again.
Right.
Or maybe a ghost around there. There's all kinds of variations. Poltergeists, nearing the climax of the energy cycle, poltergeists can become dangerous, inflicting both mental and physical terror in extreme cases. Okay? So that's in extreme cases.
Yeah.
Point that out. This don't happen with every case.
Right.
So that's what all these... I guess, you know, I really think that they should tell stories. We're telling ghost stories here. We should be telling poltergeist stories because all the weird ghost stories out there, you know, the ones with the guy with green eyes chased me out of the, you know, maybe a poltergeist, actually, you know. So those are some of the differences, though. I mean, that'll give you a better idea of how a poltergeist takes shape as opposed to just a regular haunting, whatever type of haunting it may be.
And notice that even we're not completely clear on how to classify it because there are indeed gray areas where this could be a poltergeist-like haunting, or a poltergeist activity with haunting attributes. I mean, you can have, like, they cross so much,
and
there's no, like, clear definition.
That just stems from the lack of understanding, really. I mean, we're trying, me and Doug and millions of other people are out there are trying to find a way to understand this and see how it works.
Mm-hmm.
That's why there's so many gray areas we talk about every single week.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like Doug said, a poltergeist could be part of a haunting and just masked as, okay, well, because we said poltergeist, generally, you know, characteristically speaking, they tend to move things a lot, throw things, knock things, make noises, moans, creaks, howls, all these weird things. Well, that's part of some particular hauntings we've heard.
Yeah.
I mean, geez, you heard a girl talking or screeching when you guys were at that the Ypsilanti mental hospital.
At the mental hospital, yeah.
I mean,
the girl was crying, yeah.
Everybody there was in their upper 20s, I think, that night.
Yeah.
So
I don't think we caused it. No.
So, I mean, it's part of a haunting, basically. And the haunting could be part of a poltergeist. They are interchangeable.
Yeah, it's kind of sad that we don't have, after all these years, a clear, crisp definition of this and that.
Yeah, so now you're completely confused.
Yeah, I've confused myself.
Let's talk about the stages of a poltergeist.
Yeah,
this is really cool. This is the cool part, okay?
Yeah.
There are five stages from what people have seen
concerning
poltergeists. The first stage has to do with your senses. The activity mainly revolves around the five senses of the human body.
You see something, you hear something,
cold spots,
you smell something.
Strange noises, hearing footsteps, pets running from rooms, feeling of being watched, okay?
And we've all had that. Yeah, and that's all haunting kind of stuff or ghost kind
we've
of
all,
stuff.
We've all had that. We've all felt like we were being watched. We've all heard funny sounds, which my parents used to say it was the house settling.
The house settling,
the
yeah.
The house is settling.
That happens a lot, I guess.
Yeah, and
houses must never, like, be completely settled.
I don't know what they...
And it also seems older houses settle even more.
Well, yeah.
You think they would have been settled, you know, years ago.
Because settling the ground.
Yeah, well, some of them are sinking.
Yeah. So, that's the first stage. Not too scary, you know, common stuff we deal with every day. Ghost or non-ghost. The second stage is the communication stage. Strange noises and smells are more easily discernible and direct. Whispers, moans, breezes in closed areas, marks on floors or walls. Okay, now it's getting
it's
a little...
starting to get physical, yeah.
Something's kind of weird here.
But it still can be just
a normal ghost. Or just...
if there is one.
Yeah.
But
no,
it could be a haunting.
Something can be explained. It may just be something natural. You never know. I mean, it could be bugs. It could be animals. Especially, you know.
And that's something that you start bringing in the camcorders.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you have one.
Yeah, if you're interested in it that much.
Wince.
Physical.
Yeah.
Stage, the third stage. The poltergeist makes their presence known. Now we're starting to get into the hairy territory.
Yeah, this
here,
is getting
okay?
into the interesting stuff.
Appliances start turning on and off. Electrical lights start flashing. Invisible hands touching people. Doors opening and closing by themselves. Strange knocks at doors and windows. Windows opening and closing. Now we got a problem.
Yeah, suddenly we're into physical manifestations, and these are interesting because all of these ones here in this stage could still be an actual ghost or whatever a ghost is.
And easily.
I mean, because when we're doing investigations, there's people who feel pushed or feel a hand on them or feel watched or suddenly a door will open.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't actually seen one, a door opening, but I felt touched, in haunted places.
And
you can hear, knocking, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You can hear, the creaking, the groans, the moans, the whine, the girl crying.
Stuff like that.
Yeah, you hear stuff. Yeah. And see stuff sometimes. So
that could
still be
part of
the
area you're in.
Yeah.
Not as a result of a person. Yeah,
yet.
It could still be. Still though, that's you're getting nervous though.
Yeah, and it gets
you're getting nervous.
That's where it gets really interesting.
Yeah.
That's my
now this is
interesting
stuff.
I love it.
The fourth stage is where we start crossing over into the poltergeist realm though, okay? Tricks.
This is where it gets very poltergeist activity-ish.
Yeah, it might seem like a harmless and physical entity, but it is really gathering knowledge of what people consider frightening, which it will use to inflict terror in the next stage, which is stage five, and derive its energy from the fright.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's,
now we're getting nervous.
Yeah, that's where you get into full-blown poltergeist activity kind of stuff.
Things like moving objects, flying objects, objects disappearing and reappearing elsewhere, shaking furniture, appearing as frightening entities, creating visions or illusions, speaking in ordering tones, windows, mirrors, and other objects breaking for no reason.
So later on you'll hear things like, the water taps will turn on and off, toilets will flush.
That's happened to me.
But I don't think the toilets ever flush on me, but
I've heard
what
water
happens
taps
to
turn
us
off.
What happens to me mostly is light bulbs breaking. like, you know, everything's cool one day, and then, you know, the light, you're sitting there, the light will break, and you're like, oh, man, okay, so you have to go in and replace the light bulb, and then it breaks the next day, it's a brand new light bulb.
Yeah.
And that tends to happen to me more.
You got
to
be careful with that, though, because you put the wrong type bulb in there.
I always use 60-watt bulbs.
Okay,
yeah.
Right. Then we'll rule that out, then.
Okay.
It's definitely a poltergeist.
No, it's not. No, that's just the manifestation that follows me is lights break.
Okay.
That's the one that I get.
Okay, then there is the fifth stage, though, which we call danger.
Yeah.
The poltergeist has reached its highest energy point and should be considered dangerous. Violent and threatening actions begin. After this stage, the poltergeist will go dormant and then begin the cycle again at the first stage. Fighting, slapping, or punching people. Animating objects, blood on the walls. We're getting real...
scary here.
Well, blood on the walls. We're getting real... what is it? Oh, my God. I got the story now. Amityville horror.
Horror kind, yeah.
Blood on walls, floors,
flies
and
collecting around windows? No.
Fires.
Not in there.
Attacks by unseen forces. Flying knives or sharp objects. Heavy objects falling. Threatening writings or visual signs of danger. Onset of unknown medical illnesses to people. Now, yeah, this is where we start getting nervous about this particular thing. That's creepy.
Yeah, that's where we get into, now you're like, okay, it's poltergeist time.
Yeah, so the one thing we want to discern from both these, though, is that a regular haunting
or a ghost
and a poltergeist are two different things. They're two different characteristics.
But
from the research,
there's a lot of crossover.
There's a lot of crossover, yeah. But really, from high level, though, poltergeists tend to be more threatening, violent,
mm-hmm.
throwing stuff
mm-hmm.
abruptly. I mean, I've had stuff fall on me. And you can explain
that.
Oh, I
have too.
But when you see something literally fly across the room in front of you, something's up.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know. It could be, I actually had a situation when I was like 14. And I don't know if any of you guys out here know this band, but they're called Celtic Frost. I'm a huge Celtic Frost fan. This band wrote some of the scariest sounding music you've ever heard. Me being a young kid and scared of everything, they have this one album called To Megatheron, and there's a song on there called Tears in a Prophet's Dream. And it really isn't a song. All it is these creepy noises. These creepy noises. And it's like, it's creepy. They did a great job on this. I remember it was about 3 o'clock in the morning, and I was just kind of like, my parents were asleep, and it was like summertime, so I was messing around and doing whatever. And it was real late, and I remember going to the bathroom, coming back in my bedroom, and I don't know what this is. This could be a haunt, this could be a poltergeist, this could be anything. But I had a tube of toothpaste in my bedroom. Don't ask me why. I don't remember to this day why, but I had a tube of toothpaste sitting on my bookcase on my bed. And I walked in my bedroom, and I was scared because I was listening to this music, and I was by myself, and everybody was asleep, and the house was dark. And I walked to my bedroom, and all of a sudden, I just walked in there, and I stood there for a second, and the song, the creepy noises going on, and zoom, this toothpaste tube, it flew about 3 feet, and it fell into my laundry basket sitting in my bedroom. And I was like, the only reason, it didn't go very far, but it went. It didn't just fall off onto the floor. It flew across.
Wow.
It seemed like it to me. I can't explain it.
So it's not like it was teetering on the edge of
anything. No, it was sitting around my bookcase. I remember that. Now,
it slid.
Now, what could that be? Could that be a haunting? Well, from past experience, I never remember anything else happening in my parents' house like that. Could it be my emotions flaring up because I was scared? And manifesting something like that?
Yeah.
It could very well be.
Why not?
Because poltergeist, they say these things can last from a couple minutes to a couple months.
Right.
Characteristically. One of the stories we have actually, this went on for
three years. Yeah.
That's a
Jackson
Michigan
poltergeist. That's a
really long, drawn out thing. So why don't we take a break here? I think everybody's got a good idea of what a poltergeist is now. We're going to talk about some actual stories about what poltergeist in the past. All right, Doug?
Yep, I'm back.
We'll be back in a second.
Searching for the right one, you know.
We'll be back in a second.
West Michigan Ghost Hunters Society invites you to join us at the Felt Mansion. Visit us at www.geocities.com/WMGhost for details now.
Alrighty. So, I was in Tennessee, and I went to this old southern bookshop. And this guy had books everywhere. And I managed to take a few gems for myself for like $3 a piece each, and I got a really cool book here.
You know, we should also, speaking of cool old bookstores and stuff, we should probably sometime go down and hit John King Books.
Yeah.
Downtown, that's like, what, a million book place or whatever. Yeah. That place is huge.
Yeah,
they got to have all kinds of gems and stacks. Yeah.
But I managed to pick up this book called The Poltergeist, actually, by William G. Roll. And this is a gentleman who got interested in the poltergeist phenomenon, and he did a series of investigations on it. The one we thought was coolest from this book was the biting poltergeist in Indianapolis this gentleman was studying. So I'm going to read basically straight from this book. I'm going to try to chop it down for time's sake so we can get through this stuff, because we have another one to read on your part, Doug. So this will give you a good idea, though. This is the fifth stage. This is where you
when
should be
things are
you
happening.
Should be getting some professional help.
Yeah.
And it's an amazing story. So we're going to read a snippet out of this thing for you. Mysterious bat-like bites appeared on the arms of Mrs. Renate Beck, her mother, Miss Linda Gemmick, and Linda, Mrs. Beck's 13-year-old daughter, according to a newspaper report on March 13, 1962. This is a while back. Strange movements and breakages of objects in Mrs. Beck's house in Indianapolis were also described. According to a newspaper story, it was in the midst of these breakages that Mrs. Beck felt the sting on her left arm and discovered three small puncture marks resembling the bite of a bat. Mrs. Gemmick felt similar pains at intervals and found identical marks on her left knee and left arm. So, that's how we're going to get started with this, okay? Now, of course, the first thing you're going to think of is that, well, they thought it might have been a vampire, which they quickly dispelled that and got that out of the way, and they didn't want to deal with that. The gentleman, Mr. Roll, who wrote this book and who was the main researcher for the book, found Miss Beck to be an intelligent and level-headed woman in her early 30s. She gave an unemotional account of the events, much less dramatic than in newspapers. In fact, one of the main events described here, the fall of the vase, she said, was probably caused by her as she leaned against the bookcase on which it rested.
Eerie wind in the background. Keep going.
Nice touch.
It's a fascinating
nevertheless, now this lady, she's very level-headed. She's an intelligent lady. Nevertheless, though, she was convinced that something unusual was going on in the house. She verified that something bit her and she showed him the marks, which were still clearly visible. There were not three but five small punctures on the skin, and they looked nothing like bat bites. They appeared above her right wrist, not her left arm. So, of course, the newspaper around there, they blew it up and turned it into a big drama.
Oh, of course.
But Mr. Roll actually went in there, and he was checking it out. Mrs. Beck told me that on Saturday morning, March 10th, she and Mrs. Gemmick were in the kitchen when a cup, which Miss Gemmick had just placed on the sink counter, flew across the room and smashed against the wall 10 feet away. Well, Mrs. Beck had heard of incidents like this connected with the death of someone and glanced at the calendar to fix the date in her mind. When she saw it was March 10th, she remembered with a start that this was her father's birthday. They had not heard from him for about 20 years, but thought he was alive in Germany. He and Mrs. Gemmick were separated in 1943. For some reason, I wish I didn't read that, because I really don't have much to do with what's going on here. They just mentioned that for some reason.
Yeah, I know.
But anyways, it was about a half an hour later, as the two of them were sitting at the kitchen table, that the five stings or puncture wounds appeared. That seemed to be the end of it. But then, at about 4 o'clock, when they were back in the kitchen, Mrs. Gemmick suddenly screamed and clutched her left arm, where five or six puncture marks appeared. After dinner at about 8 o'clock, when Mrs. Beck was in her bedroom and her mother was in the bathroom, the latter again received five or six punctures, this time on her leg. Altogether, she was wounded on 14 occasions. The number of individual punctures ranging from 1 to 8 per occasion. Let's see here. I want to get to the good stuff here. Mrs. Gimmick said she thought that the bites were due to a spider of some kind. That was what she thought, maybe. This seemed unlikely. Several times, clusters of five or more punctures came at the same time. It is difficult to suppose that one or more spiders or insects could produce these marks simultaneously without ever being seen. And for a spider to puncture you noticeably like
also,
it would have to be a pretty good sized spider.
Yeah, I've had spider bites too, and they tend to swell up, and on me anyway, and into like a... Well, everybody knows what mosquitoes, you know, when you get a mosquito bite, it swells up into a little mound, a little reddish mound kind of thing. When I get a spider bite, it swells up into a very large mound.
Depending on your allergy,
and hard, yeah. So okay. I'm thinking that, you know, unless it swelled up, but see, they don't tell you all the good stuff.
No, but okay.
Doesn't answer all the questions.
Spiders, we're going to rule that out, okay? It's even less likely that a larger animal, such as a bat or a mouse, could have made them an escape detection.
Right.
Okay. I do not think that Mrs. Gimmick took her own theory seriously. I never saw her look for insects, nor heard her ask others to do so. Her use of the cross... Well, she had a cross over her, too.
Yeah.
I missed that part, but she had a cross over her. When this happened, she had a cross on her chest when he ran in the room.
Well, he said use of the cross, but we don't know, was she holding a cross, or was she just doing the genuflect kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. I mean, back then, I imagine, Indianapolis, the cross would have, I mean, there's a demon after me.
A physical
cross. Yeah.
So she was relying more on religion to save her from these than...
Yeah.
Looking for what's causing it.
Yeah, now... Yeah. In all cases in this, we've mentioned there's a few people here. We got, let me just go back here real quick. We have Linda Gimmick, Renate Beck, and Linda, Mrs. Beck's 13-year-old daughter. Okay, so we have three people here, all right? In all cases except for the first, the victim of the bites was Mrs. Gimmick.
Mm-hmm.
So she was getting nabbed, like, every single time.
Tasty.
13 out of the 14 occasions.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The distribution
just
of the marks.
Trying to bring some levity to the situation.
The distribution of the marks on her body, as well as a number, varied widely. Those I saw were within an area of 2.5 inches, but otherwise seemed to be randomly scattered. There was nothing to suggest that bat bites, about which the newspapers wrote. One cluster of punctures was on her throat, another on her right breast, 5 on her legs or thighs, and 4 on her arms, both the right and the left. Usually she was alone when she received them, but 4 times she was with her daughter or with visitors at the house. So, very random occurrence.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it wasn't like the movies where every time you're alone, something happens to you and you can't explain to anybody.
Yeah.
There was people there when she was like, ow!
And then you look and there's, like, puncture marks.
Yeah. Now, let's come back to Earth for a second. The simplest theory is that the marks were due to some minor skin disease and were only thought to be bites when attention was drawn to them. However, this apparently cannot account for the punctures from which the blood was flowing, because there was a couple...
Yeah, there were a couple where when they'd go and look at the punctures, there was actual, you know, blood. You could see she was bleeding.
Yeah, which it was seen by others. The most reasonable, ordinary explanation, in my opinion... This is Mr. Roll's opinion, is that the wounds were self-inflicted by Mrs. Gimmick, presumably in a state of disassociation. This, of course, would not explain the 5 punctures on the wrist of Miss Beck, unless we suppose that she also entered a disassociated state. Now, we just said a second ago that Miss Gimmick was the one that was getting bit. Miss Beck got bit only on the first occurrence.
Time. Yeah.
So
what he's saying is basically the wound. You know, whoever was being bit at the time would go into a disassociated state, which is like, you know, having a fit, epileptic fit or a seizure, that kind of thing, and inflict these wounds and then come out of it and be like, "Wow, I just got bit," you know, and then let people know.
Yeah.
Well, that, you know, maybe, I don't know, but it seems like if it only happened over a short period of time and you know, didn't recur after that, what was going on all of a sudden that changed things?
Now, okay, whatever the explanation, though, the punctures occurred within a period of time covered by the poltergeist disturbances, or rather within the first 2 weeks when most 71 out of 76 bites.
Oh, my gosh.
Which the other five were from this back.
Yeah.
Of the unexplained movements, that's when the unexplained movements were recorded also, because there was movements here. Stuff
flying
around.
Yeah, stuff flying off shelves and crashing to the floor and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Miss Gemmick's most unpleasant experience, well, her most unpleasant experiences were in the early morning hours of Tuesday, March 13th, 1962. There had been 8 movements of objects the previous afternoon and evening, and Miss Beck had called the police. At about 2 o'clock in the morning, she was downstairs when a policeman and Emil Nozetta, a friend of the family, Miss Gemmick was in the kitchen upstairs. Nozetta told me they suddenly heard Miss Gemmick scream that she was glued to the closet door in the kitchen. She freed herself and started down the stairs when she again screamed. They found puncture marks on her thigh from which blood flowed. She then sat down on a couch downstairs, but had been there only 15 minutes when she again screamed and said she had been choked. Nozetta told me, we heard Miss Gemmick scream. She was sitting on the Davenport, felt choked. Policeman saw skin pinched as if by fingers. Pin marks came then.
So you're talking, what they're saying here is that the police officer was there in the house, present, and this incident happened in the kitchen. She comes out to the, you know, main room or whatever, sits down. She feels choked, and the policeman actually saw, like,
marks.
Where invisible fingers would be clenching her throat.
Yeah.
And we talked about this briefly when reviewing the story. And I mentioned how contortionists can control muscles, and like some people can wiggle their ears, you know, they can control their muscles. Not that this lady would do that, because, you know, why would you do that? But you could, it is conceivable, I think, though, that you could make your muscles
move,
appear contracted. Yeah.
Yeah, but, okay, if someone strangles you, you know, if you take your finger and press it real hard on your arm,
oh,
you'll see a white spot.
It'll leave
the white spot. You're pushing the blood back. You're squeezing it out of the way.
Yeah.
But
there's no detail.
Yeah, they didn't really leave the detail there, so it's up you know, it's up to our own imagination to see what happened. But nonetheless, the cop did say, "Hey, there's something on your neck."
Yeah, and then of course the pricks, you know, the punctures.
Yeah, the punctures also
happened as well at that time. So yeah, I mean, There's a lot more going on, I think, than, you know, just simple contortionist, like, muscle movements.
Yeah.
But,
And she's also saying she was stuck against a door.
Well, again, you know, people...
This could be... I mean, we could just say right now and just blow the whole story out the door and say, we got a drama queen on our hands here.
Yeah.
She's poking herself, and she just wants attention.
Well, and it could be, but the thing is, there is, you know, when you go to sleep at night, your body produces a chemical that basically freezes your body so that you cannot act out your dreams.
Uh-huh.
And so your body goes, basically paralyzes itself so that when you're sleeping, you're not, hopefully not, you know, acting out your dreams.
Uh-huh.
So, and that's related to the old hag, you know, when people are sleeping and then they wake up and they can't breathe and it feels like somebody's sitting on their chest and they see somebody coming at them with red eyes and something and blah, blah, blah. The old hag syndrome, you know, that's all actually, you know, a biochemical thing.
That's why you feel real weak when you wake up.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's hard to get up. Because that chemical is still flowing.
Yeah, it's still there.
I know what you're talking about. I actually forgot the name of the chemical. I wish I would have prepared for it. But,
well,
yeah.
I remember it too. Or, I mean, I remember reading the name of it, but I don't remember it offhand. But I do know that that's the old hag syndrome what starts that. So I mean, she could have just all of a sudden, her body produced a bunch of that stuff, and she, you know, then felt pushed against the door, which was actually her body, you know,
she might
reacting
collapsed,
to the chemical.
Collapsed, anything like that. Interesting story, though. Interesting story.
A good story.
I mean, dramatic. Fighting
yeah. poltergeist.
Yeah, that's serious. And like we said,
none of that explains the, you know, movement of objects.
Yeah, and that would be part of the whole poltergeist. That's at stage five, though. Like we talked about earlier, that'd be at stage five. They may have been through all four stages and not really paid much attention.
And then
all of a sudden, I mean, the fifth stage. This is where it starts to get dangerous. Here, I'm being physically harmed by this entity or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
So, interesting story at that, though. There's lots of stories out there. We have another one for you right after this break.
Ghost Hunting, My Ethereal Anti-Drug.
You're listening to Ghostly Talk with your hosts,
Doug
and Scott L.
Okay, so we've been bit by a ghost or a poltergeist.
Well, yeah. Ow.
We wanted to get another story for you guys, and we thought it'd be kind of cool to try to find one.
In Michigan,
yeah.
So, you know, since Ghostly Talk, what do we call it? Haunted Basement Studios?
Yeah.
The Haunted Basement Studios are in Michigan. We're in beautiful Fraser, Michigan.
Yes,
yeah.
Wonderful Fraser, Michigan.
And, so we thought, well, you know, let's do a poltergeist in Michigan. So all you have to do is go to Google and search for Michigan poltergeist, and you're going to get this story.
Yeah.
So it's like obviously the most, you know, popular one or whatever Google uses to link.
This is about the Jackson, Michigan poltergeist.
Yeah, the Jackson, Michigan poltergeist way back in 1960-ish or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Take it away, Doug.
Why did these happen, you know, way back then?
No, nothing happens now.
So anyway, basically it was... should I just read right from this website? Do you have the name of the website?
I'm gonna get. I'll get that for you right now. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I'll read. Oh, let me get some wind in here for my story. It's actually a really good story. Let's get some wind. There's some wind. Okay. Here, in case you can't hear. Yeah, it's kind of windy in here. Okay. The events in the Lincoln home began quietly and without much fanfare. In fact, the strange occurrences had been taking place for more than 2 years before the residents realized that they were not simply the targets of malicious burglars or vandals. Oh, yeah, that goes on and on. Okay, let me just paraphrase that stuff for you. Basically, for years, or a couple of years, they would come home and lights would be on or things would be broken and the house would be, you know, a disheveled mess. So they're like, okay, well, we gotta lock the doors. So they would lock the doors, and they, you know, double locked the doors and stuff like that, and the stuff would still happen. So, let's see. So now we can skip to... yeah, because that just goes on and on. Although that does...
I slimmed it down. Sorry.
No, you did really well, but they talk and talk and talk on the site, you know, about that. Victor Lincoln was the man of the house, and basically, yeah, okay, dishes and bottles were seen hurtling through the room, moans came from the basement, heavy footsteps endlessly paced back and forth through the house, doors opened and closed, water spigots and gas jets turned on without assistance, and books would vanish from, oh, this is a cool one, books would vanish from their bookcase, and then later reappear stacked on a bed, and we're not talking about, like, one or two books. Like, you know, somebody grabbed it and then misplaced it. Uh-huh. We're talking 10 to 20 books at a time. So we're like, okay, that's kind of cool. I mean, scary, but cool. So, the only... It seemed to be a typical poltergeist. I mean, in that all the stuff was going on. And they did have two teenagers and a 22-year-old. So they had two sons... 15 and 22, and their daughter, Georgine, was 13.
Yes.
So, you know, a 15-year-old male, a 22-year-old male, and a 13-year-old female, as well as Mr. and Mrs. Lincoln, were in the house, you know, lived in
so
the house.
So there are teenagers. Female teenagers.
One female teenager, one male teenager.
Yes.
So, it went, It went on and on. This was a three-year poltergeist
activity.
Yeah,
3 years, which is not characteristic of a poltergeist. They usually they go from, they say, from minutes to a couple months.
Yeah.
I mean, and you're not even going to notice.
One that goes for a couple minutes or even a day.
But maybe
a
story I was talking about my bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
It could have been a couple minutes.
Yeah,
it could have been a
couple-minute poltergeist.
Never know.
So we're talking the culmination, when they finally decided, okay, that's it, we're moving out the house, was one evening, John and his mother were seated in the living room reading when they heard the loud noise of someone walking up the basement steps to the kitchen. The footsteps came to a halt and were then followed by a terrific pounding of someone on the other side of the door. Thomas ran in from his bedroom, convinced that someone was trying to break into the house. Mrs. Lincoln quickly grabbed his shotgun. And opened... let's see what happened there. And opened... There's a problem with the internet, you know?
Yeah.
But still, it's a good story if you look it up. And opened the door to see who was there. There was no one in the basement. Even after descending the steps into the cellar, he didn't notice anything particular. But the dog, of course, did. The hair, the dog started to whine, and the hair stood up on his end, and he ran back upstairs. The dog got freaked out anyway.
Yeah, sure.
But it evidently freaked out the Lincolns as well, because that's when they decided, that's it, we're moving. And after they decided that they were moving, that was it. They got no more peace. I mean, it was an absolute madhouse in there after that. And, let's see. Connected with their decision to move out of the house. See, they're so wordy. That's the problem. The house was a generational house. I mean, the Lincolns who were living there, you know, it was a Lincoln household before that. So, like, it had been lived in by, you know, many generations of the same family.
Uh-huh.
So they're trying to think, you know, who back in our family who lived here would be doing this?
Yeah.
And, you know, they didn't come up with
that
maybe,
like we said, crossing over into a different area.
Yeah, and why would they...
But, I mean, the reason we're telling it is because predominantly it has the characteristics of a poltergeist.
So I got to read this one. The Lincolns certainly saw the activity to not only increase, but became much worse. Heavy footsteps and moaning sounds constantly echoed through the house, and bottles and glasses frequently flew from the pantry shelves and shattered on the floor. Although no one was ever really hurt by the projectiles. Oh, well, here's a story where Mrs. Lincoln had a knife, which was securely locked away in a closed drawer, suddenly hurtle itself across the room and basically nick her in the leg.
And so she got out right there.
Yeah, she got a little bit. Well, they had already decided they're moving, so they were pretty well, you know, getting out of there. Now, this is the cool bit. Christmas, after they decide to move, Christmas comes around. They kept the tree up only 2 days.
Jeez, what happened to it, Doug?
Jeez, I wonder. one night they were all in the living room when the lights suddenly flew off the tree and scattered about the house. Bulbs and tinsel joined the lights, and soon the living room and the tree were wrecked. That was enough for us, Mrs. Lincoln later explained. The tree came down.
So,
I mean, that's going to be awful to live with. Anyway.
No, I mean, God.
Okay, so Henry Keller, a Jackson County police officer who did not know the Lincolns, came to visit after he heard about the strange goings-on in their house from other officers. He went as a skeptic, of course, and later he told the reporters that something odd was going on in that house. Yeah. He's still not certain of, you know, whether there was any reasonable explanation or not, though. He was there when the gas jets turned on. And the gas jets, I imagine they're talking about in the kitchen, the stove. Because they did say it was in the kitchen, but they didn't say the stove. The only thing is, what else would you use gas for in a kitchen?
Yeah.
So I imagine they mean the stove, a gas-operated stove. He was keeping track of all the people.
Uh-huh.
You know, he was like, okay, the kids are here, the mom and dad are here. You know, he, like, knew where everyone was, and yet the gas jets turned on. So
strange.
That was kind of interesting. there were other folks there. Oh, other things happened as well. These two people came over the house, and they didn't know them very well. But they were there, and they were expecting the police officer. They were expecting Mr. Keller. And evidently, while they were there, the snow came down and, you know, gently covered, you know, the porch and the walkway and everything like that. And, 15 minutes before Mr. Keller was supposed to get there, they heard, you know, knock, 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 and they're like, oh, he's here already. He's here early. They get up and they go to the door. There's no one there. There's no footsteps on the walk or anything. And 15 minutes later, he actually, you know, arrived. And, you know, knock, 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 and they're like, gee, I wonder if this is a person or...
Yeah, geez, who could this be?
Yeah, so it's like they're sitting around and,
waiting for a flaming bag of poop to be
swung at the door.
Yeah.
So this newspaper reporter, Raymond Maher?
Sure.
Okay. He goes over there, and he's a skeptic.
Uh-huh.
And he was just absolutely positive it was, like, a hoax or they were a victim,
yeah.
You know, victims of pranks. And so he spent, like, 10 hours there on three separate occasions. It turns out he does realize, you know, eventually that something's going on.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what it is. I can't explain it. But he did come up with some things that he noticed. And this is really interesting scientifically.
Yeah.
It was almost always the Lincolns who would notice something first.
Ah.
I hear water running. Let's go investigate. And the Lincolns would run around the house trying to find a water spigot turned on, and sure enough, there would be one. Well, and then everybody clusters around. So that would be like if I said to you, I hear water running, and then I ran into the bathroom, turned on the water, and then you followed me and saw
there's
that.
Water running.
And there's the water running, you know.
Haunting.
That's not a haunting. So he noticed there were a couple of things like that, but there were also other things that were that couldn't be explained away like that. But another thing too,
when you're a guest in someone's house, you lived in that house for X amount of years, you're gonna know what your house sounds like.
Yeah, and you'll know pretty much where.
Yeah, what
are.
We're in your house right now. I'm sure there's things here that you hear that I wouldn't really notice.
I never hear anything.
But you know your house though.
Yeah.
I don't know your house.
Yeah.
So that could be part of that.
But you would think if you're all sitting around the family room and you're all, like, you know, there to hear things and to experience things,
that if your senses
you would,
are tuned into
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you would be, like, totally tuned in even if you're a guest in someone's house.
Good point. Real good point.
And sometimes he would say that, you know, the reporter guy, he'd say that, you know, it could be imagined that somebody used the lavatory, left water running, and then came out and just waited for someone, non-family member, to hear it.
Yeah. I think it very well be that.
You know,
really, though,
same
let's think about this. We're talking,
why would they do it?
Yeah, we're talking about, this is a long time ago, too.
Yeah, that's a long time ago. And this is, but this also,
unless they were trying to make money off of it.
Well, that's the thing. Even back then, and it's true even today, if you're in a haunted house and stuff, and you try to sell it, usually you're
going to buy it.
Yeah, you immediately limit the market that you're selling to.
Exactly.
Because you're not going to sell to any old Tom, Dick, and Harry. Sorry about that.
No problem.
But because you're going to, you know, if people hear that it's haunted, some people are going to say, I don't want that house.
Well, this story does, as weird as it is, some of it's kind of funny, the whole tree incident.
Oh, it all happened. They moved and never came back.
It has the poltergeist. The poltergeist characteristics, though. Violent.
Mm-hmm.
Things flying around. Knives thrown at people. Trees being ripped down.
Yeah.
You know, most hauntings, they're not characteristic of that. Poltergeists are characteristic of that. So that's the big difference, though, is the violent nature of a poltergeist as compared to Casper.
Yeah.
Sorry. I mean, a regular haunting. There's a lot of different types of hauntings, too. We didn't want to focus on that too much because we don't have any time, obviously.
Yeah, we also ran out of time.
Yeah.
We covered
everything we set out to do tonight, though.
We did, and it's a good thing
it's
we sat down
show.
And said, okay, we're going to do, we're going to talk about this for a half hour, then we're going to go to the two stories, 15 minutes each, and then...
Yeah.
And it actually worked out.
Yeah, we actually did it this week. I'm surprised. It's a rare occurrence here at Ghostly Talk that we actually don't throw anything in the wastebasket today. We actually got it all out there to you guys.
Yeah, this was everything we had dredged up and said we would talk about. We dredged up a lot more, but we, you know, weeded it out. Uh-huh.
But like we say, though, every week we do a show on something different, obviously. We want people to think about it, though.
Yeah.
We don't hear, well, that was cool. Okay, well, thank you. We appreciate that. But think about it.
If you go out and onto the internet and you do a search for poltergeist activity,
or you go to the library, God forbid, if you go to the library,
go to the library.
I mean, imagine that. We actually pulled some stuff out of a book this week. I mean, a real old book with a cover and everything. I mean, wow, a book.
Yeah, if you do anything on this topic, past the show, we've done our job.
Yeah, think about it though. Hop on the message board on the website.
Yeah,
tell us what you think. Give us some ideas on this. Get them out there. Because this is what it's all about. We're all trying to figure out what's going on here. And I can't tell you how many sides of an issue I hear about every day with something. And it's like, wow, I never thought about it like that. Same thing with poltergeist, whatever we're talking about that week. Think about it. Tell us what you think. Email us at ghostlytalk@yahoo.com. Hit the message board. Catch us on the IMs. We're on the IMs during the show every week. Ghostly Talk.
Yeah.
Tell us what you think during the show. We can handle it. We're multitasking individuals here, so we can do it. Every week we want you guys to do that, though. That's what we're pushing this show towards. It's just a contributory show.
We want folks to think about it and
let
us know what you
think. I'd like to be able to do shows like we did Poltergeist. I'd like to be able to come back to it with people's ideas.
Yeah.
And just go and talk an hour about,
upon those.
Hey, so-and-so from wherever said, you know what, this is what I think. And I'd like to discuss that. Because, I mean, pulling stuff off the internet and pulling stuff off of books, that's really great. It's informative. It's good. But I want to hear other ideas.
Yeah.
That's my personal preference.
I think that would be awesome.
So on that note, we're going to have to call it a day here.
Yeah, we'll see you again next Sunday at 7 p.m.
Yes, I'm Scott L.
And I'm Doug.
And this was Ghostly Talk.
True science will not deny the existence of things because they cannot be weighed and measured. It will rather lead us to believe that the wonders and subtleties of possible existence surpass all that our mental powers allow us clearly to perceive.
We must ignore no existence whatsoever. We may variously interpret or explain its meaning and origin, but if a phenomenon does exist, it demands some kind of explanation.
A quote from The Principles of Science, William Stanley Jevons, 1835.